The title of this message is Lessons from Job. Here's a printout from Life, Hope, and Truth, where they give overviews of books of the Bible. I'll read a couple of sections from here. The book of Job presents some of the most challenging questions faced by humans throughout history. What is God like? What does he allow? Why does he allow suffering? How should we respond to trials? What should we do when we are treated unfairly? And even what should we say to someone who is suffering? The book leads us to explore these questions through a tragic story and some poetic dialogue. It stands as one of the most thought-provoking and magnificent pieces of literature of all time. The story of Job is told in prose in the short prologue and epilogue, while the main middle section is Hebrew poetry. Now, it poses all these questions, you know, that you possibly answer and contemplate through the book of Job. But if you think about it, after the ministry of Christ, his sacrifice, the giving of the Holy Spirit, and the New Testament scriptures, most of these questions are already answered, at least for us Christians led by the Holy Spirit. But there may be a lesson or two still to be learned in Job. We know God's thoughts are higher than our thoughts. Time and chance happen to all of us. We will endure trials and persecution and some even martyrdom. But one of the great lessons to me from the book of Job is how much knowledge and understanding we have been given that they did not have. The story is presented as poetry, but Job was a real person. Actually, the scripture said Job lived 140 years after this trial. In Ezekiel 14, verses 14 and 20, God himself spoke of Noah, Daniel, and Job as examples of righteousness. Job seemed to be living at the time of the patriarchs. He was apparently an older man. He's very rich. He was prominent. He was an elder who sat in the gate. He had a seat in the square. He administered justice. He instructed many, etc., as you would expect a person in his status. So let's look at Job 1, verse 1. All of the scriptures, a lot of scriptures, are going to be in Job. And sometimes you'll feel like I'm jumping around. So if you can keep up, that's fine. I have the scriptures in my notes, see, so I can get there quicker than you can. And besides, I'll read them all to you anyway. Job 1, verse 1. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright, and one who feared God and shunned evil. And in Job 1, verse 8, God even tells Satan the same thing. Job was righteous. We have to keep that in mind as we go through this. And all that that meant at the time that he lived a righteous life. Not only did he pursue righteousness himself, but God even considered Job righteous. Now, we know the story of Job, okay? Satan said Job was obedient because God blessed him, gave him children, and made him rich. But God allowed Satan to take all of that away. Children were killed, servants were killed, livestock were taken. Then Satan was allowed to, quote, touch his bone and flesh, unquote, but not to kill Job. Job had painful boils from the bottom of his feet to the top of his head. And you think about it, that had to be extreme suffering. Oh, I turned that on, wasn't it? Now, I want to look at the characters in the story of Job, one at a time instead of just going sequentially through the book. Now, which means we'll be doing a little jumping because not everything that each character said was in the same place. They had more than one conversation with Job. But let's begin with his wife, Job chapter 2. Job 2, verse 9. Then his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die." Okay, that's not my kind of woman. So we'll move on. Job had three friends, all right? And the three friends came to comfort Job. And we pick that up here, Job 2 and verse 13. So they sat down with him on the ground 7 days and seven nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his grief was very great. Then Job gives a long dissertation, if you read the book, lamenting his very birth. So you can imagine what torment he was in. Now, the scriptures about Job are very important, are most important for this message, but it's interesting what his friends had to say. So I will try to choose a few of the pertinent scriptures that illustrate the points that these friends were trying to make. So we'll start in chapter 4 with Eliphaz. Now, I wanted to call them friend 1, 2, and 3, but I will struggle on with the names. Okay. So chapter 4, verses 7 through 9. Like I say, these are just selected scriptures to illustrate the points. Remember now, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the upright ever cut off? Even as I have seen, those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his anger they are consumed. So Eliphaz thinks Job is being punished. So that means he is guilty of sinning. Now we go to chapter 5. And then chapter 5, verse 8. But as for me, I would seek God, and to God I would commit my cause. So Eliphaz, is implying that Job is not seeking God, or a little vanity coming out of him here. Now we have to jump over to chapter 15, because this is a different conversation that he is having. So in Job chapter 15, verses 8 and 9, have you heard the counsel of God? Do you limit wisdom to yourself? What do you know that we do not know? What do you understand that is not in us? Okay, vanity is getting a little deeper here. Now, down in verse 14, what is man that he could be pure, and he who is born of woman that he could be righteous? He denies that anyone could even be righteous, although we know Job was righteous. Now we skip over to chapter 22. This is going to be chapter 22, verses 5 through 9. Is not your wickedness great and your iniquity without end? For you have taken pledges from your brother for no reason, and stripped the naked of their clothing. You have not given the weary water to drink, and you have withheld bread from the hungry. But the mighty man possessed the land, and the honorable man dwelt in it. You have sent widows away empty, and the strength of the fatherless was crushed. Those are outright lies. You know, Job was a righteous man in God's eyes, and he did not do any of these, as you would find elsewhere in Job when Job is explaining it. So we get to Bildad, friend 2, and we go back to chapter 8. So we're in Job chapter 8, and this is going to be verses 2 through 6. How long will you speak these things, and the words of your mouth be like a strong wind? Does God subvert judgment, or does the Almighty pervert justice? If your sons had sinned against him, he has cast them away for their transgression. If you would earnestly seek God and make your supplication to the Almighty, if you were pure and upright, surely now he would await for you and prosper your rightful dwelling place. Job's children did not die because they sinned. This was a test of Job. He is saying that Job was not earnestly seeking God, and he assumes Job is not pure and upright. Now we go to verse 20 down there. Behold, God will not cast away the blameless, nor will he uphold the evildoers. Again, assumes Job is not blameless. Then we skip over to chapter 18, where he has another conversation. And this is chapter 18, verses 2 and 3. How long till you put an end to words, gain understanding, and afterwards we will speak? Why are we counted as beast and regarded as stupid in your sight? All right. They consider Job lacked understanding, and he's getting pretty angry at Job now for disagreeing with him. And finally, for Bildad, and we're in Job chapter 25. Job 25, verse 4. How then can man be righteous before God, or how can he be pure who is born of woman? Well, it's like Eliphaz. Bildad thinks man fundamentally cannot be pure or righteous. So now we're going to get to Zophar. Z-O-P-H-A-R. Friend 3. And just a couple of verses, because they keep saying the same thing over and over. In chapter 11. So this is Job chapter 11, verses 5 and 6. But oh, that God would speak and open his lips against you, that he would show you the secrets of wisdom, for they would double your prudence. Know therefore that God exacts from you less than your iniquity deserves. Oh, boy. He's implying that he knows the secrets of wisdom and says that Job deserves even worse than he's getting already. And then down in verses 13 and 14, if you would prepare your heart and stretch out your hands towards him, if iniquity were in your hand and you put it far away and would not let wickedness dwell in your tents. All right. Again, he's saying that Job is wicked. Now we get to the real winner. Now, this is not one of Job's three friends. This is Elihu. We find him in chapter 32. So we're in Job 32, and this is verse 4 and 5. Now, because they were years older than he, Elihu had waited to speak to Job. When Elihu saw that there was no answer in the mouth of these three men, his wrath was aroused. So the three friends lost the argument with Job, so now Elihu is really upset. He was angry because the three friends could not win their arguments. So, chapter 33. And in 33, we look at verse 3. My words come from my upright heart. My lips utter pure knowledge. Oh, boy. Not just vain, but pompous. Then verse 6. Truly I am your spokesman before God. I also have been formed out of clay. Self-proclaimed spokesman before God. Then we look at chapter 34. This is chapter 34, verses 35 and 36. Job speaks without knowledge. His words are without wisdom. Oh, that Job were tried to the utmost, because his answers are like those of wicked men. And again, he wants Job to suffer even more. And then we look at chapter 36. This is Job 36, verses 2 through 4. Bear with me a little, and I will show you that there are yet words to speak on God's behalf. Oh, boy. I will fetch my knowledge from afar. I will ascribe righteousness to my Maker. He's stepping on it real close here. For truly my words are not false. One who is perfect in knowledge is with you. All right. If that's not Pharisaical vanity, it may be outright blasphemy. So, what have we seen in these four men? Or at least I could see. Vanity, even Pharisaical vanity or blasphemy. They had superiority complexes. But they assumed man cannot be righteous at all. But we know Job was righteous. But most importantly, they assume trials mean punishment from God for sins. Well, that sounds like worshiping pagan gods, you know. If things are going well, the gods are happy. If things are going poorly, the gods are unhappy. And their attacks sounded like an academic discussion, didn't they? But they were just rambling a lot without a clear understanding of God at all. Now, let's turn to Job to see if he did any better. After all, he was actually righteous. So we'll start in chapter 7. There are quite a few verses about Job. And so we're in chapter 7, verse 20. And Job is speaking to God. Sometimes he speaks to his friends, and sometimes he's speaking to God. And this verse 20, "Have I sinned? What have I done to you, O watcher of men? Why have you set me as your target so that I am a burden to myself?" Okay, he wants to know what he's done wrong. Why is he being afflicted? Of course, he did not know the introduction to the story, okay? He's only in the poetry part of it. Let's look at chapter 10. And in chapter 10, we'll look at verses 2 and 3. Now, this is Job. "I will say to God, do you condemn me? Show me why you contend with me. Does it seem good to you that you should oppress, that you should despise the work of your hands and smile on the counsel of the wicked?" All right, so he's asking God, why me? Then we look at chapter 13. In chapter 13, verses 1 through 3, and he's talking to his friends here. "Behold, my eye has seen all this, my ear has heard and understood it. What you know, I also know. I am not inferior to you, but I would speak to the Almighty, and I desire to reason with God." Okay, so he wants to take his kid. He wants to reason directly with God. Chapter 13, down verse 15. "Though he slay me, yet I will trust him. Even so, I will defend my ways before him." So Job is going to defend himself even against God. And here he is down in verses 22 and through 24, and he's speaking to God. "Then call, and I will answer. Or let me speak, and you respond to me. How many are my iniquities and sins?" And that's a legitimate question. Make me known my transgression and my sin. Why do you hide your face and regard me as your enemy?" Okay, he wants to speak and have God respond to him. Now we go to chapter 16. Chapter 16, verses 12 through 17. "I was at ease, but he has shattered me. He also has taken me by my neck and shaken me to pieces. He has set me up for his target. His archers surround me. He pierces my heart and does not pity. He pours out my gall on the ground. He breaks me with wound upon wound. He runs at me like a warrior. I have sewn sackcloth over my skin and laid my head in the dust. My face is flushed from weeping, and on my eyelids is the shadow of death. Although no violence is in my hands, and my prayer is pure." Okay, he sees the affliction from God, but Job still maintains he is pure. And he may be right. Let's go to chapter 19. Okay, chapter 19, verse 6. "Know then that God has wronged me and has surrounded me with his net." Okay, now he openly says God has wronged him. Now down in verses 23 through 27. "Oh, that my words were written. Oh, that they were inscribed in a book." Hey, he got his wish, all right? They are inscribed in a book. That they were engraved on a rock with an iron pen and lead forever. For I know that my Redeemer lives, and he shall stand at last on the earth. And after my skin is destroyed, this I know, that in my flesh I will see God. Actually, it would be in the spirit he will see God, whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold, and not another. How my heart yearns within me. So Job did actually love God. I mean, you would expect that because Job was a righteous person. He is just lost in the suffering that he's going through. So now chapter 23. Chapter 23, verses 2 through 7. Even today my complaint is bitter. My hand is listless because of my groaning. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come to his seat. I would present my case before him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would know the words which he would answer me and understand what he would say to me. Would he contend with me in his great power? No, but he would take note of me. There the upright could reason with him, and I would be delivered forever from my judge. Okay, so he wants to go to the throne of God and present his case and argue it out. Now look down at verses 10 through 12, 10, 11, and 12. But he knows the way that I take. When he has tested me, I shall come forth as gold. My foot has held steps fast to his steps. I have kept his way and not turned aside. I am not departed from the commandment of his lips. I have treasured the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. He apparently knows he's being tested, and he maintains his righteousness. Now let's go to chapter 30. And in chapter 30, we're going to look at verses 20 and 21. I cry out to you, but you do not answer me. I stand up, and you regard me, but you have become cruel to me. With the strength of your hand, you oppose me. Okay, so now he thinks God is cruel. So, what have we seen from the Job's narratives here? Well, he definitely lacked humility. He is not humble before God. Well, we're supposed to go to before the throne of God boldly, but this guy like tried to run over it. Okay. Also, he talked about God academically, like his friends did. All right, like he was some kind of an equal that you could go and argue with. Thought he could argue or reason with God like he did with his friends. He even wanted God to respond to him. Obviously, he did not understand his true relationship to God. He was righteous, but I would probably call this procedural righteousness. You know, he did all the right things that he knew to do. That is true, because he was righteous. He did not sin, but it was like book spirituality, because we could see that his relationship with God was not really what it was supposed to be. He was lacking something, or he wouldn't be in the book. Okay, so now God gets his turn. Okay, so we're in chapter 38. And of course, by now we hopefully start to put ourselves in Job's place and say, okay, how would we handle this? Okay, then God has his say, starting in chapter 38, verses 1 through 3. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? All right, there's a whirlwind. You know, this is like a tornado of some kind. And the voice of God comes out of this thing. And who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Now, below are just a few of the questions that God asked Job in chapters 38 and 39. And I'll just go through them to get a feel of what God is trying to show Job. And remember, now Job is of the mindset, you know, I want to go before God. I want him to respond to me. I want to make my case, and I'm going to argue this out. So here's God asking him some questions. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Who determined its measurements? To what were its foundations fastened? Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place? Have you entered the springs of the sea, or have you walked in search of the depths? Where is the way to the dwelling of light and darkness? Where is its place? Do you know it because you were born then, or because the number of your days is great? Can you bind the cluster of the Pleiades or loose the belt of Orion, those constellations? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you set their domain over the earth? Who has put wisdom in the mind? Or who has given understanding to the heart? So he's blasting Job like, where were you and who am I? Now we're in chapter 40. And in chapter 40, I'll look at verses 1 and 2. Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, shall the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? He who rebukes God, let him answer it. Okay, so I'm going to read some more of the things that God asked Job in verse 40 and 41, and just a few of them here. Would you indeed annul my judgment? Would you condemn me that you may be justified? Have you an arm like God, or can you thunder with a voice like his? Adorn yourself with majesty and splendor, and array yourself with glory and beauty. Who has preceded me that I should pay him? Everything under heaven is mine. All right. So I want to do something similar, but I'm going to use other scriptures. All right. You don't have to turn there. I'm going to go to Genesis 1, and I'm just going to pull out a few verses or phrases out of this and ask similar questions, because those that God asked Job were kind of pretty far-reaching. All right? In the beginning, first three words in Genesis 1, in the beginning. And the question is, where were we? God created the heavens and the earth. Where were we? The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. Then God said, let there be light. But where were we? Then God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And where were we? Then God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together in one place, and let the dry land appear. But where were we? Then God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit. But where were we? Then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night. But where were we? Then God said, let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth. But where were we? Then God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beast of the earth. But where were we? And then finally, God said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. We are created beings. We owe God our very existence. All we know, have, ever will have, or ever will be is from God, physically as well as spiritually. He has a plan for this world and for mankind and for us to be in his family. What we can learn from the book of Job is that we need to go beyond what I had called procedural righteousness. We need to know God and have a proper relationship with Him. After all, we are very small creatures on a very small planet in His vast universe. So here's the closing comments from Job, which I'll just go ahead and read. It's in verse 42, verses 5 and 6. Famous closing statement. I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Therefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. And the end of the story, Job's three friends made offerings to God. Job prayed for them, and apparently they were forgiven. Job's wealth was restored more than before. He had 10 more children. Probably not by his wife at the beginning of the story, since they were already older. And Job lived for 140 years more. It does not say that Elihu was forgiven. So, besides all that, I highly recommend the book of Job. I mean, a lot in there. It's interesting to see what they did know about the plan of God and the future, or even that they might have known that the world was round. All right, there are all kinds of proverbs, kinds of statements within the book of Job. It's well worth the read.